We are always honored when Bishop Carl W. Beener of the Presiding Bishopric of the Church favors us with a visit, and doubly honored when he speaks to us. He needs little introduction to the student body of Brigham Young University. You may know that he is a native of Germany, having come to this country in his youth. In America, he has acquired a reputation as a business executive, was the founder of the Beener, Cinder & Bloch Company, director and owner of several companies. He has had a vast experience in church work, having served in almost every capacity. He's been a bishop, a stake president, a member of a regional welfare committee, chairman of such a committee, a member of the church central welfare committee, and since 1952, a member of the presiding bishopric of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Brother Beener, we welcome you here. We rejoice when you can visit us. Would you kindly address?
This is a most inspirational sight, and I feel highly honored to have the privilege of having a few moments with you this morning. I might tell you, as I left, I learned that my wife was to speak to the Authors Club in Salt Lake City, and my daughter was to address the Relief Society in her ward. And I've had the feeling since that the Beener family might be sunk as public speakers before this hour's over this morning. Because of the numerous inquiries that come to us concerning the responsibilities of the presiding bishopric of the church, I felt that I might say something to you this morning in this respect. And as a preface to this, I'd like to read a statement that concerns the quorum that preside over the presiding bishopric. On March the 18th, 1833, the first presidency of the church was organized for the first time in this dispensation. This was nearly 3 years after the organization of the church. 1 year prior to this, Frederick G. Williams was designated through a revelation to be a counselor to the prophet Joseph. However, the prophet did not set up the first presidency until the above-mentioned date. The first presidency is actually a priesthood quorum consisting of three high priests, the president of the church and his two counselors. It is their responsibility to supervise the entire work of the church. Regardless of how the church grows and expands, the authority of the first presidency extends over every part and function of the church. Since its organization, the church has had 9 presidents, two of whom have previously served as counselors, President Joseph F. Smith and President David O. McKay. 12 men have served as first counselors, and 16 have served as second counselors, some in both of these positions. Elder Henry D. Moyle is the 30th man to have the opportunity of serving as a member of the first presidency of the church. 10 men called to serve as counselors in the first presidency were called from positions other than in the council of the 12. 6 of the counselors were never ordained to the apostleship. The first presidency is the governing authority of the church. They are the living oracles of God and the supreme interpreters of the law of the gospel. And of course, therefore, all other quorums come under their supervision and under their direction. Now, it's not my purpose to establish the origin of a bishop from the scriptures this morning. We'll assume that you know that there is such an office and it can be justified. Neither do I wish to take the time to give the history of the presiding bishopric since the organization of the church, but to start from now on. or as we are presently organized. Joseph L. Worthlin, the presiding bishop, is the eighth presiding bishop since the organization of the church in 1830, and is the only man who has held the office of first counselor and second counselor to the presiding bishop. The presiding bishopric constitute a quorum, as do the first presidency. With the approval of the council, of the presiding bishop is appointed by the first presidency, and with the approval of the council of the 12, he has the privilege to recommend his counselors, and they, of course, to be approved by this same body. It is interesting to note here that the work of the presiding bishopric does not come under the direction of the council of the 12, but are directly responsible to the first presidency of the church. At the time the present presiding bishopric were set apart, we were told that among other important responsibilities, we preside over the Aaronic priesthood in all the world. We were also told that the doors of the first presidency would always be open to us. A very important meeting is held each week, at which time the presiding bishopric present problems that should come to the attention of the first presidency for their consideration and their direction. And at this same meeting, there are often items which have come to the first presidency to be referred to the presiding bishopric. Also at this meeting, every Friday morning, a financial report is made to the first presidency on every cent of money that has been turned in through the presiding bishopric to the church. Now for some of the responsibilities that come under our direction. First, as I've already mentioned, is the Aaronic priesthood. It might be interesting for you to know that we have in the wards and stakes of the church in excess of 200,000 Aaronic priesthood bearers. Of these, more than 50% are over 21 years of age. Now, in our church, this brands some of our brethren a little, because had they been active during their teen years, they very likely would have been advanced to the Melchizedek priesthood and not have been considered as men over 21 years of age still bearing the Aaronic priesthood of the church. And a great work is going on among these men to see what can be done about reactivating them and bringing into their life an appreciation of the great honor of being a bearer of the priesthood of Almighty God. In other words, sharing His power. And I've often stated and still feel very strongly that if we only appreciated the great honor that's ours by being bearers of this priesthood, and we all had an understanding of what this could lead us to ultimately in rewards and blessings pertaining to God's kingdom in the earth, our chapels, as many as we have, would not hold our church membership. And so as we set out programs that we hope will be effective, we're discovering that many of these men are coming to an appreciation of what they've missed over the years and are taking their rightful place in their home and becoming a blessing to their families and assisting them in living closer to the commandments of our Heavenly Father. Of course, it becomes necessary under the direction of the presiding bishopric that we prepare the lesson manuals, we set out programs to follow, we have quite an elaborate system of keeping statistics and records on these brethren. And it might interest you to know that last year more than 4,200 of them were advanced from the Senior Aaronic Priesthood Program to the Melchizedek Priesthood Program, and for this we are most grateful. Regarding the boys under 21 years of age, I've had a strong feeling that can we bring the boy through there comes at 19 years of age, or between 19 and 20 years of age, a turning point in this young man's life. If he's been faithful to the Aaronic priesthood that has come to him and has held successfully the office of a deacon and a teacher and a priest, at that time the honor comes to him to receive the Melchizedek priesthood. And by receiving the Melchizedek priesthood, he may have the further honor of being invited to serve as a missionary for the church, and also through his faithfulness of going to the temple and there being married. Three important things. Other blessings, of course, are added to these, but three important things happen at this time that can change the course of a young man's life. And so we feel that it's very, very urgent in every ward, in every stake of the church, that we do all we can to assist in bringing these young men through, that they might enjoy the great future ahead. One of the other programs that comes under the direction of the presiding bishopric is the vigorous ward teaching program. And might interest you what the size of this program constitutes. At the present time in the organized stakes, we have approximately 375,000 families. There at the present time, more than 142,000 ward teachers serving to visit these families. Our books are not quite complete for the year 1959, but it appears that when the records are in, we will have averaged 82% visits during the year 1959, and this is the finest record we have ever had in the church. Ward teachers will have made approximately 3,650,000 visits to these families in this 1 year. Figured on a basis of 15 minutes per visit, a total of about 230,000 8-hour man days were spent by ward teachers making visits in 1 year's time. The ward teaching program is the only program in the church designed to reach every fireside, and for that matter, each member of the church at least once each month. It's the program that literally extends its arms around the entire church to strengthen and to bless the membership of the church. The ward teaching program may seem commonplace to some, but President McKay has said next in importance to the bishopric of the ward are the ward teachers. And ward teachers are virtually a bishopric to the families assigned to them to visit. And the visiting, in his opinion, should not be restricted to once a month, but as often as that family might need guidance, help, if there's unemployment assistance in the unemployment program, or for any other purpose, these ward teachers should be so close to this family that they can help them in all of the needs that come or that they might require. The presiding bishopric are members of the General Priesthood Committee of the Church. 28 of the general authorities of the church sit each month in a great committee meeting, and I've often wished members of the church could sit in such a meeting and hear the wisdom and the counsel that is presented in this meeting for the blessing and direction of the priesthood work of the church. We're also advisors to the General Welfare Committee of the church and are on many of these committees. We're members of the Expenditures Committee of the church. Some of you know what that represents, but each year there's a very solemn meeting held at which the estimated income of the church is placed into budgets for different purposes. And even though it's placed in a budget, as the budget for the Brigham Young University, the budget for the for erecting new buildings, for missionary work, and for all purposes for which funds are required. These funds cannot be taken out of this budget until a committee called the Committee on Expenditures, which meets every Tuesday morning, approve the removal of the funds from the budget for the purpose for which they have been budgeted. Now, whenever anyone needs any money in the church, the request comes to the Committee on Expenditures. I want to tell you, the funds of the church are very carefully handled. It's already been mentioned that I'm in a number of businesses, and I wish that funds in the business with which I'm associated had the same scrutiny and the same care that do the funds of the church. The church has a hospital system, 14 hospitals. The presiding bishopric have the responsibility of the direction of these hospitals. The large hospitals have a board. The member of a presiding bishopric becomes the chairman of that board, and stake presidents living in the area of the hospital constitute members of the board. In the smaller hospitals, this responsibility comes directly under the presiding bishopric. And these hospitals are, in some instances, far removed from the headquarters of the church. Those of you who've ever had anything to do with hospitals know that it's not an easy task to administer the affairs of a hospital. It's a great challenge, but these hospitals are also a great blessing to the membership of the church. The presiding bishopric attend quarterly conferences each week. They're used to dedicate chapels. We interview many missionaries. Since the time I've been there, I've interviewed some 1,500 missionaries. Great honor, real thrill to sit down with these young people enthusiastic about going into the world for 2 years to preach the gospel. One thing the presiding bishopric do not do is tour missions. Because of the responsibilities we have at home, we are not asked to tour missions, as are the other general authorities. We receive many special assignments, and we don't know just when these might come. Some time ago, sitting in an expenditure committee meeting, after we'd had considerable discussion about our building programs in the South Pacific, and no one seemed to know too much about them, President McKay looked down the row at the table and saw me and said, Bishop Beener, we want you to go to the South Pacific. Well, I said, fine, that's wonderful. When can you go? And I said, in about 30 minutes. No, he said, it'll take you a couple of weeks to get a passport to make preparations to go, but you do that. Then he said, let's see, when will you be back? And I said, I don't even know where I'm going. Maybe you know how long it takes. You've been there. And he said, let's see, you'll be gone about 6 or 7 weeks, and you'll be back here about 2 weeks after General Conference. And I said, President, that'll be just perfect. He said, finally said, you leave the day after General Conference. So I had 7 wonderful weeks in the South Pacific. And these special assignments can come any day to any one of the brethren. We have the supervision of all that goes on at Temple Square, with the exception of missionary work, but the maintenance of the buildings and the grounds, also the block on which the church office buildings are located. We have under our direction about 250 employees. And we try to keep the headquarters of the church looking in a respectable way because of the large numbers of tourists who visit us each year. We have another department in the church that comes under our direction that you don't hear so much about, but it's a tremendous department. That's the master membership file of every member in the church. We have there more than 1,600,000 membership certificates. And we like to think we're so efficient that in a matter of 5 or 6 seconds, we can bring out a certificate of any member in the church, whether they live in Hong Kong, in the South Pacific, in South America, in Canada, Mexico, or wherever it might be. Now, it might interest you to know that we have a minimum of 30,000 of these membership certificates go through our office every month. And we've had as many as 90,000 in 1 month's time. In other words, when a family or an individual move from one location to another, their membership certificate goes through our office and are transferred from there to their new address, if we have a new address. We don't always get the address, and it would be very helpful to us if, when people move, we always received a forwarding address. This certificate is a very important document in the lives of members of the church, and we like to have it kept as accurate as we possibly can. Now, because of our system of percentages, we've discovered we have bishops that would like to lose some of their members, those that are not too active, and I'd like to tell you we're always trying to find them. So we're working against each other if you lose them and we try to find them. We'd like to keep up with all of our members all of the time so that those who feel they've been active and are entitled to a rest won't move off in a section and can't be identified. I think you'll have to agree with me that they belong in the wrong church if they want to be in a church of resters. This is no church in which to rest, and our blessings come from activity and not from resting. I could talk for some time about the problems in our membership department. If someone commits a sin against the church, it's our responsibility to identify that membership certificate that an individual's been disfellowshipped or excommunicated. There's no other department in the church that handles this. And we refer to these membership certificates constantly. When new stakes are created in the mission field, it's amazing how much these are used to identify members that might be qualified to be leaders in the new organizations that are to be created. Another responsibility that's ours, and I mentioned it just very briefly, very early, is that we're responsible for the auditing and checking of all of the tithes that come to the headquarters of the church. We have some 4,000 accounts responsible to us each month. Every ward and every branch in the church is responsible directly to the presiding bishopric for an accounting of their tithes and fast offerings. Well, now, if there's any one thing that must be accurate, 100% accurate, it's tithing. If we receive a tithing report from a bishop that's off 50 cents or 75 cents, it's necessary to write a letter back, tell him that we found an error in his report, because that 50 cents or 75 cents might represent the full tithing of a member of the church. And as far as tithing's concerned, we want every member to receive full credit for all they've paid, no more and no less. Well, now, it's not an easy thing. If branch presidents don't send their reports in when they should, you can imagine the amount of correspondence that could be necessary in a month's time to keep all of these accounts current. But for everything that's turned in, every Friday morning, the first presidency are made aware of this, and they can check what's happening in the church with what happened a year ago. And, of course, this affects the expenditures that the church can make. Now, as far as tithing is concerned, there are many questions that might be asked about this. I think we could have a very interesting hour in a meeting like this as to just what constitutes tithing. We get many calls every day on the telephone. We also receive many letters just asking, what is a tenth of your income? And I'm amazed at the faithfulness of some people, and I'm just as amazed at how of the ingenuity of others to see how much they can charge off. We recently had a telephone call from a wonderful person in the Northwest who had lost her husband. She said, "Because of the death of my husband, I have come in possession of $125,000 in life insurance. I'll receive $25,000 more 1 year from now. All I want to know is, do I pay my tithing on the $125,000 now or on the $150,000? I told her that I didn't think the Lord expected it to be paid in advance. You pay on the $125,000 and you pay on the other $25,000 when you get it. And I'm sure everyone will be very thrilled about this. On the other hand, you'd be surprised that some people like to see how little they have to pay and still call it a tenth, still call it a tithing. Well, I don't want to take more time on that. This is an interesting subject in the church, and the presiding bishopric, you're in the middle of this all the time. We have another department. Two departments are quite closely allied. We have a shipping department that sends literature and packages all over the world. Every place we have members of the church, you'll find packages, hundreds of thousands that go out every year from this supply department at the headquarters of the church. We have a mailing department that I guess is as big as the mailing department of most of the cities we have in the state of Utah. There might be five or six that are larger, but next to that, I would say our business with Uncle Sam and our equipment to send out the mail is about as great as all cities in Utah, with the exception of maybe the first five or six. There isn't one day in the week that the racks are not all cleared and that each piece of mail that's been filed under the direction of a bishop or a stake president clears that file and is sent to him every day in the week. Now, if you don't get the mail you think you ought to get, it's because someone hasn't taken the time to answer your correspondence and they haven't sent it to the mailing department. But if it had come there, you would receive it the following day. We have a medical welfare department to look after those who need hospitalization assistance, those who might need care in nursing homes, those who may need hearing aids, eyeglasses, dental attention. It's tremendous. I would say that from the fast offerings of the church, something like $1.5 million is spent each year just to look after the medical welfare problems of members of the church who can't afford these things themselves. I'm proud of what we do. And now, in conclusion, let me say just this. The immediate staff of the presiding bishopric consists of one field man for each member of the bishopric and one secretary. We don't have boards like the others do. I don't know what we'd be able to accomplish if we could have 100 good men and women to assist us in our work. But it's a wonderful experience. It's a real thrill to be a member of the presiding bishopric and to see the great work roll forth, to see what's happening in the church. We've never had the activity in the church that we have right now. It was reported that in 1958, 30 ministers representing different religious denominations joined our church. I've met two or three of them. I think I had a little influence in helping the conversion of one of them. I enjoy my work. I love the leadership of the church. I can see the church grow and expand, not only in numbers, but in faithfulness and in power among the people of the earth. I'm always thrilled to see what's happening here at the BYU. I remember when everyone was on one side, then on one side and in the center. Now we're on the other side. It's been a great privilege to be with you. I bear you my testimony of the divinity of this great work in which we're engaged, and pray our Father in heaven to bless you and magnify you in your efforts to serve him and to love him Because if you love him, he'll love you. I pray for these blessings in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.